So the view must be that the mind or the self is identical to the brain, not the body. OK, so that immediately removes one of the intuitive bases for this type of theory that I started out with, which is that I recognise you as the same person from day to day by recognising your body as the same. That works well enough when there are no body transplants going on, because there's a correlation between the body of a person and that person, because normally we don't switch bodies. But if brain transplants become common, it'll be no use for me to rely any longer on people's bodies as a criterion of their identity. If I know you're going to have a body transplant tomorrow and you're going to have a new body, and you come in with a new body, it's no good me saying it's not you because it's a new body. You'll say to me, I just had a body transplant. It is me. And you'd be right to say that. So it's only contingent, it's just accidental that the body goes along with the identity of the person. There's no essential connection or necessary connection between the person and his or her body. So it must be the brain that's being considered. So now what's being maintained, of course, is that the self is the brain, a view which sounds much less appealing intuitively and at first sight than the idea that it's the same as the living body. So it's the brain. But this doesn't get the theory off the hook, of course. We still have the problem of replacing in that brain the whole series of memories and experiences and personality traits we started out with. If we do that to somebody's brain and give a completely different set of different psychology to that person, then again, we're not inclined to say that that is the same person. Let's put these two things together. Let's suppose the following operation occurs. We take my brain from my body. We put it into your body. Your brain has been conveniently removed and pickled for future use. Let's not go into the ethics of this situation. Your body is now a receptacle for my brain, so we put my brain into your body. However, we do something rather strange. We eliminate from my brain all of the memories and traits, personality traits that I have, and we insert into my brain all of your memories and personality traits, not Adolf Hitler's this time, but all of yours. So we extract from your brain, by the magic machine, the magic brain zapping machine, or brain, in this case, brain reading machine, we extract from that all of your memories and we put them into a computer, let's say, and all of your personality traits, and then we introduce them into my brain, the one that's been put into your body. So the person wakes up after this operation, and what do they feel like? Well, that person has all your memories, all of your personality traits, and has your body, but has my brain. Who is that person? Certainly not me. It's you, isn't it? It's not me. The idea that that's me, very hard to believe. So we can't identify the self or the person with the brain. We can't with the body because of the body transplant problem. We can't with the brain because of the replacement of memories and personality and so on in the brain. So we can't really identify the self with the brain. So we've got two theories we've considered so far. The first theory is the extravagant theory that the mind is this transcendent, peculiar soul pellet idea. That just seems hard to believe. We don't know what to make of that. The common sense, apparently common sense, nice naturalistic view that the person is identical to the brain seems to fall apart under critical examination. So what view should we arrive at? Well, we're heading in a certain direction. We've said so far that we need to recognise that the person is essentially connected to the person's character, the person's mental states in general, the person's psychology. So let's go for that theory. Let's suppose that the person is somehow to be explained in terms of the mental attributes that the person has. That seems to be the way we're headed anyway, and that's the next theory, often referred to as the bundle theory. The bundle theory was favoured by a philosopher we've mentioned before, David Hume. David Hume made the observation that if I try to encounter in my experience my own self, I run into a problem. I introspect my own mind and I encounter in there various mental attributes. I find there are certain sensations, there are various beliefs, there are certain emotions and so on. But Hume said, when do I ever encounter the thing I call I? Do I ever have an experience of the thing I call I? It seems as if that thing lies behind all of the things I do encounter. We're inclined to think that it's something which has all those things. It's the hook on which they hang, the peg we talked about earlier, and then we get to the simple ego theory. But actually all I really encounter, Hume said, were this set of experiences, the mental attributes I have at any given time. So let's forget the idea, he suggested, that there's anything which has these mental attributes. Let's explain the self in terms of the mental attributes themselves. Let's just suppose that the self is, in his phrase, the bundle of the experiences which belong, as we normally think, belong to the self. It's just a collection of them. It's just them, the totality of them as they exist at any particular time. So that's the idea. So now, at any given time, what we'll say is, what is it